Let's continue our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired word by opening to the book of Songs, the Song of Songs, or the Song of Solomon. I've already shared with you my conviction that this is intended to be an opera celebrating romantic love. I don't believe it should be spiritualized. In fact, I think it's a little uncomfortable, some of the sexually explicit parts of this book, when we try to apply them to God's love for Israel or Jesus' love for the church. Instead, I think it's just supposed to help us understand that God wants couples to be in love with one another and to enjoy the gift of sexuality that was given before sin came into the world. In fact, I keep reminding you of the book of Hebrews, chapter number 13, that says that marriage is to be honored by all, and the marriage bed is undefiled. So let's celebrate marriage, celebrate relationships, celebrate sexuality by looking at the Song of Songs. Now, of course, this is PG-13 material. I've warned you about that each time. Younger listeners need to be occupied elsewhere during the duration of this book. We've come through several scenes where the couple has developed their relationship. They're together. They're looking forward to getting married. And now I think we've arrived at that marriage. I think that it's a themed marriage where they are treated as if they are royalty. He being treated as if he were like King Solomon, and she as if she were a princess. The book, I don't believe, is about Solomon and any of his princesses, because it's pretty clear early on that the man in this is a shepherd who sometimes takes care of Solomon's horses, and she works in the palace, in guest services and in food services, because all of that would have been needed in the very busy palace of King Solomon. So chapter number 4 is where we're going to pick up today. We've already looked at the first few verses, but I'm going to use them as kind of the beginning of our context as we continue today. The man is singing to his bride, and he is praising her body, starting at the top and working his way down. And I believe that this is getting everything ready for the honeymoon. Chapter 4, verse 1. How beautiful you are, my darling. How beautiful you are. Your eyes are like doves behind your veil. Maybe they're flitting around, or maybe they're that gray color, kind of the very light blue. Your hair is like a flock of goats that has descended from Mount Gilead. So her hair is hanging down in little strands, little locks, black locks on each side of her head. Your teeth are like a flock of newly shorn ewes, which have come up from their washing, all of which bear twins, and not one among them has lost her young. So he comments upon her smile. It's bright white, and it's full because she's got all of her teeth still. Verse 3, your lips are like a scarlet thread, and your mouth is lovely. So she's put some nice bright lipstick on, and he loves to look at her mouth. Your temples are like a slice of pomegranate behind your veil. Apparently, she's got some blush on her cheeks as well. Your neck is like the Tower of David, built with rows of stones on which are hung 1,000 shields, all the round shields of the mighty men. And this is where we finished up last session, where he is looking at the beauty of her neck, but also commenting on the jewelry that she's wearing on her neck, which more than likely is the dowry that he has saved up and given to her, which has been turned into jewelry, very common practice. It is just setting off the beauty of her whole head. And then we get to some very explicit language. Your two breasts are like two fawns, twins of a gazelle, which feed among the lilies, until the cool of the day when the shadows flee away, and I will go my way to the mountain of myrrh and to the hill of fragrance or frankincense. So he comments upon her breasts, specifically upon her cleavage, apparently, which you may remember way back at the beginning of this opera. She was singing about her fragrance that she wore as a sachet, a little sack of myrrh between her breasts in her cleavage, so that she would smell good when she went about her daily work in the palace. But she was dreaming back at that time that eventually her beloved would be nestling right there between her breasts. Well, here he is thinking about the same thing and singing about it. That I see your breasts there. They're like twin gazelle babies. And I want to lay down my face right there when the shadows are fleeing away tonight. So I told you, this is a celebration of romantic and sexual love between a husband and a wife. And we need to not blush and shy away from the intimacy that is being sung here. And this is probably one of the reasons that this was a problematic book for a lot of the commentators in the past, because this is just really right there in your face, I want to make love to you sort of language, okay? Verse number 7, he continues commenting upon her body. You are altogether beautiful, my darling, and there's no blemish in you. Now, that's definitely the type of language that a woman wants to hear from her lover. That I love looking at your body. It's exactly what I long for. Okay? Verse number 8. Come with me from Lebanon, my bride. May you come with me from Lebanon. Journey down from the summit of Amman, from the summit of Senir and Hermon, from the dens of the lions, from the mountains of the leopards. Now, all these are references to places in the north, which make me wonder whether or not he's from up in that direction. Maybe she seems to be from up in that general vicinity as well, as we'll see later. But the language here is also symbolic of some sort. I think it's maybe intended to be euphemisms for moving from their wedding ceremony to the climax of their sexual intimacy that's going to be coming at the end of the evening. Because it's coming right on the heels of something similar to that in a previous verse. And he's clearly excited about the prospect of what's coming next, because that's verse number 9. You've made my heart beat faster, my sister, my bride. You've made my heart beat faster with a single glance of your eyes, with a single strand of your necklace. So just looking into her eyes, as he's looking at her body, he's anticipating what's coming soon, and his heart is beating faster and faster and faster. That's definitely descriptive of the honeymoon moments. Now, I do need to comment on this idea where he calls her my sister, my bride. That's not some sort of weird incest reference. Here seems to be the contextual community concept that's coming from that. When you were growing up as a young man, the girls that you knew were your sisters. They were your intimate female companions. Your mom, but she was much older than you, was also there. But your sisters were right around your same age. So they were your companions, your intimate friends of the opposite gender. So when you get married, your new companion, your new intimate partner of the opposite gender is your bride. So she's kind of replacing that early childhood friendship that you had with your sisters with this much more mature and much more sexually intimate, because you don't think about your sisters in that way, but the intimacy of your bride now. So she's kind of replacing your sisters in that sense. And so it became this verbiage to refer to your bride as your sister. All right? So just take it for that culture connection. So he'll use that several more times here. Verse number 10. Remember, he's singing all this. We're watching an opera. How beautiful is your love, my sister, my bride. How much better is your love than wine, and the fragrance of your oils than all kinds of spices. So he's thinking and talking about kissing her. That's that wine reference again, the taste of the kisses, and the fragrance that's coming up from her, from all of the perfume that she's wearing. And he's doing the same thing. He's wearing fragrance as well. It was their way of dealing with bodily odors back at that time, to wear fragranted oil. But it would be especially important on special events like this, their wedding night. Verse number 11, your lips, my bride, drip honey. Honey and milk are under your tongue, and the fragrance of your garments is like the fragrance of Lebanon. And so again, clear references to kissing here. And the smells of the moment. And verse number 12, now we get to the verbiage of desiring to culminate this relationship with sexual intercourse and very intimate sexual contact. Verse 12, a garden locked is my sister, my bride. A garden locked, a spring sealed up. Now, we have seen this couple engage in kissing before and caressing of one another, but I believe that they have stayed with the standards of Scripture to remain sexually chaste, that is, sexually pure, until the night of their wedding. And so the locking that's mentioned here in reference to a garden and a spring is a reference to the fact that they've not been sexually intimate up to this point. In the Proverbs written by Solomon, Solomon advised his son that he shouldn't be letting his waters just run out in the street, that he should satisfy himself with water from his home well. And it becomes clear from the context that he's talking about keeping your sexual connection only with your wife, or if you flip the gender, only with your husband. That God's intention was sex was to be enjoyable. He designed our bodies to be sexually responsive, male to female. And he also designed the climactic orgasmic mechanisms to release chemicals into the blood to bind emotionally the couple together. And so this idea here that's coming forth in the opera is that up to this point, the garden has been locked to him. The spring has been sealed up against him. But now that they're married, all of that can come unlocked. Verse 13, your shoots are an orchard of pomegranates with choice fruits, henna with nard plants, nard and saffron, calamus and cinnamon, with all the trees of frankincense, myrrh and aloes, along with all the finest spices. Now, all of those plants are referenced with beautiful look, beautiful tastes, beautiful smells. And so they are being used here to stand in for the experience of sexual activity between a husband and wife. And all the smells and tastes and sights that are part of that. verse 15. You are a garden spring, a well of fresh water, and streams flowing from Lebanon. So he describes her as all the wonderful things that he's been looking forward to experiencing, now open and ready for him to be a participant in. And what's her response? Verse number 16. Awake, O north wind. Come, wind from the south. Make my garden breathe out fragrance. Let its spices be wafted abroad. May my beloved come into his garden and eat its choice fruits. So she's basically saying, let all of my fragrance, and I don't think she's just simply talking about perfumes here, folks. I think she's talking about a lot of the other bodily smells that come up during the excitement phases of sexual activity. And so she says, let all of that just be put out there so that he can now be invited to come in and enjoy my garden, my vineyard, my orchard, my body. And so now the couple is ready to consummate their relationship. And verse 1 of chapter 5, the man sings, I have come into my garden, my sister, my bride. I have gathered my myrrh along with my balsam. I've eaten my honeycomb and my honey. I've drunk my wine and my milk. And so kind of, yes, we have. We've consummated our relationship. We've enjoyed each other's bodies. And then the chorus chimes in at the very end as we close the scene. Eat, friends, drink, and imbibe deeply, O lovers. And if we were doing a modern presentation of this, the lights would go down. So that basically they are being encouraged, just keep enjoying each other, keep loving each other, and making the most of the gift that God has given to couples. One man, one woman, together as sexual beings for a lifetime. That brings us now to scene number 6, by my reckoning, which I believe takes place into the future of their marriage. And I believe it's another dream sequence, or at least it starts out as a dream sequence. But this time it's a nightmare. And I think the nightmare arises out of a little tiff that has apparently happened between the man and the woman, which we know that happens in marriages. It's just the way that interpersonal relationships work, that it's not always great. Sometimes one or the other gets a little snit going, and things get out of hand, and words are spoken, and sometimes somebody storms out of the house. Well, that, I think, seems to be what has happened here. And so the woman is singing as this, I believe, dream sequence begins. I was asleep, but my heart was awake. And that's very similar to the earlier scene that we had. A voice, my beloved, was knocking. So there's knocking going on at the door. And the man now sings, open to me, my sister, my darling, my dove, my perfect one, for my head is drenched with dew, my locks with the damp of the night. So he's outside, and he's apparently been out there for a while, and it's early morning. He's got the wet of dew on his head, and he's asking her, please unlock the door, let me in, because apparently she's locked the door. Verse 3. How does she respond back? And this is where I think we get the idea that there was a bit of a tiff. I've taken off my dress. How can I put it on again? I've washed my feet. How can I dirty them again? So basically, she's singing back, I don't want to get up and unlock the door. I'm in bed. I'm ready to go to sleep. And that's the problem right there, is that there's a separation between them. There is an estrangement that's happened. But he's not going to just give up instantly. He tries to get into the house. Verse 4, my beloved extended his hand through the opening. Now, the way that the doors back at this time apparently worked is that you would reach into some sort of access point on the door and unlatch it and push it open or pull it open. Now, there was a locking mechanism, though, like a bolt, perhaps, that could be put in place on the inside where you could not activate the latch from the outside. So what we seem to have happening here is he's trying to get the door open, but it won't open because she's got it locked. And so she hears him fiddling around with the door, trying to get it open. And then her heart seems to melt. She seems to realize that she does love him and she doesn't want to leave him out in the cold or out in the wet. So verse 4 continues, my feelings were aroused for him. And so I arose to open to my beloved. My hands dripped with myrrh and my fingers were with liquid myrrh on the handles of the bolt. Now, I'm not altogether certain why the mention of myrrh is here, other than maybe some sort of poetic device that the fragrance of their love one for another is what motivates her to get up and unlock the door, to get it open so that he can come in like he wanted to. Ah, but that's not the way it worked. Verse number 6, I opened to my beloved and my beloved had turned away and had gone. So in that moment, he gave up and he went away. So when she flings the door open, wanting to make up, he's gone. And so my heart went out to him as he spoke, and I searched for him, but I didn't find him. I called him, but he didn't answer me. So in her dream, in her nightmare, she's out in the night, wandering the streets, looking for her beloved that had tried to get back in with her, but she'd rebuffed him and left him locked out. So he went away, and when she opened the door, he wasn't there anymore. So she's looking for him, calling for him. And this is very similar to the scene earlier, isn't it? Where she was not yet married to him, but she was wanting to be married to him. And she couldn't find him in the middle of the streets, in the middle of the night. And so she found watchmen, remember? And she asked them, have you seen my beloved? Do you know where he's at? And that scene eventually ends with her finding him. Well, watchmen come into this, but it's more of the nightmare. Verse number 7. The watchmen who make the rounds in the city found me. They struck me and wounded me. The guardsmen of the walls took away my shawl from me. And all of us know that this is kind of how bad dreams work. You go to bed, you're upset about something, and you have this dream and something bad happens, and then something looks like maybe it's going to get better, and then all of a sudden it turns into something worse. Well, that's what's happening in her nightmare here, is she thinks that she might be able to get some help from these watchmen, but instead they beat her up and they take away her shawl. And so verse number 8, the scene shifts to her begging for the women in Jerusalem, the women that she's worked with, to help her. I adjure you, O daughters of Jerusalem, if you find my beloved, as to what you will tell him, for I am lovesick. So she sings, I need your help to find him, because I do love him. I do want him. I want to work through this thing. And that's where the chorus now sings. And I think somewhere she kind of wakes up. What kind of beloved is your beloved, O most beautiful among women? What kind of beloved that thus you adjure us? So the chorus once goes, why don't you tell us about him? How do you feel about the way he looks and the way he makes you feel? So this is now her chance to sing out a description of him. And again, it's her talking about his body and how she feels about it. My beloved is dazzling and ruddy, outstanding among 10,000. So she loves him more than any other man. His head is like gold, pure gold. His locks are like clusters of dates and black as a raven. So he's got dark hair as well that kind of hangs down in little locks on the side. His eyes are like doves beside streams of water bathed in milk and reposed in their setting. So maybe he's got those really pale blue eyes as well. His cheeks are like a bed of balsam, banks of sweet-smelling herbs. So she loves the way his face smells when she's up close to it. His lips are lilies dripping with liquid myrrh, so she loves kissing him. His hands are rods of gold set with beryl. She likes the way it feels when he's holding her. His abdomen is carved ivory inlaid with sapphire. So he sounds like he's got a bit of a six-pack going on there, but he feels good when he's holding her up close to his body. His legs are pillars of alabaster set on pedestals of pure gold. So she likes him from the top of his head to the soles of his feet. His appearance is like Lebanon, choice as the cedars. And his mouth is full of sweetness, and he is wholly desirable. This is my beloved. This is my friend. Notice that. O daughters of Jerusalem. So she loves the way he looks, but she sees him as her best friend. And she doesn't want to be separated from her best friend. She does not want to be estranged from her best friend. She wants him to be back in her arms and she in his arms. Let's close with what the chorus sings back to her at this point. Where has your beloved gone, O most beautiful among women? Where has your beloved turned that we may seek him with you? So the chorus is inviting her, let us help you find him so that you can get this relationship back on track.